And good afternoon, everybody. We're live in the studio today, so if you want to join in the conversation, please do so. Phone number is 321-1670, 321-1670, or *123 on your U.S. cellular phone. Also, this program, as all of the programs here on All About Living, are posted on carolcobyradio.com. Carol Coby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com. So it can be all about living all the time if you want, but it makes for a very convenient way to hear the programs. And some of them, and this one and today in particular, you may want to pass along to somebody else to listen to because it's could be very pertinent and important in their lives. This segment of our program is brought to you today by Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center. Well, one of the silent elephants in the room of life, I think, is domestic abuse. And domestic abuse can involve anyone. It can happen to anyone, regardless of race, income, education, gender, sexual orientation, age, or religion. And one of the organizations that is there to support efforts against domestic abuse and provide all of the needed resources and support systems that people need to confront it and move on with their life is an organization called DAISE, and that stands for Domestic Abuse Intervention Services. And with me in the studio today is Shannon Berry, who is Executive Director of the Domestic Abuse Intervention Services. And I welcome you.
Thank you.
I saw you on television last night, Shannon.
Yeah, we had an event last night that was put together by the family of Tracy Judd and her daughter, Deja Renee. And it's an annual event to celebrate Tracy's life. It happens on her birthday every year, and it helps to raise money for Domestic Abuse Intervention Services. So we're very grateful.
Yes. Tell me about Tracy Judd's story.
Tracy and her daughter, Deja, were two of the homicide victims last December of 2009. They were murdered by Tracy's boyfriend, and there were two other people murdered as well, another a woman that he had another child with. And, you know, Tracy, I think, was somebody that didn't really fit the stereotype of what people think about when they think about domestic violence. As you mentioned, domestic violence can happen to anyone, and I think Tracy was an example of that. She was from this community, grew up here, was a soccer mom. She, you know, was kind of the all-American girl and athlete when she was in high school, and just I unfortunately never had the privilege of meeting Tracy, but I've gotten to know her family very well over the last year, and it's a very tight-knit family. And it's interesting, Tracy's sister, Lisa, who's gotten very involved with DAISE, talks about how she had no idea that Tracy was living in a violent relationship. And I think, unfortunately, that's all too common. You know, Tracy's family has been incredibly courageous in terms of talking about what happened to their family and their grief and turning it into something positive and trying to get the message out that domestic violence can happen to anyone. And it is a silent epidemic, and we need to stand up as a community to address it.
In Tracy's case, her sister didn't know she was in a violent relationship. Did they know or suspect at all prior to the murder, or did this all come out afterwards?
It all came out afterwards. You know, Tracy's twin daughters obviously knew something was going on because they lived in the home, and children living in violent homes are often aware. But the rest of the family really didn't have any clue. And, you know, I think so often, I think we have stereotypes about battered women or domestic violence victims as being very passive and, you know, tormented. And I think, you know, in Tracy's case, she was a very intelligent and independent woman. And I think she thought she could just handle it and maybe didn't want to reach out or tell people what was really going on because there's a lot of shame involved when you have to admit that you're a domestic violence victim. Because there's unfortunately still that very pervasive culture that asks, well, why doesn't she just leave? And, you know, unfortunately, and Tracy's case is a perfect example of this. Victims are 6 times more likely to be killed by their batterers when they're attempting to separate from the relationship than at any other time. And we know now that Tracy was taking steps to separate from her boyfriend. So, you know, that's the reason. I mean, it can, and so I think we have the challenge to our community is to change the question from why doesn't the victim just leave to why does the batterer make the choices to use violence in the relationship? Because that's the better question, and that puts the onus where it belongs and the responsibility where it belongs.
Regarding the individual leaving who's being abused, I would think, too, that sometimes it can become a new normal. Mm-hmm. And that they get used to it, and that they've been in it long enough.
Sure.
They know what it takes not to have the abuse flare up.
Absolutely. You know, I think, again, nobody really wants to admit that they're a domestic violence victim. And batterers will make very deliberate decisions to isolate their victims from other people so that the batterer's reality becomes the victim's reality and that they can control the victim's beliefs and including their beliefs about themselves. So that's why, you know, they want to separate them from friends and family so that the victim isn't getting the support and self-esteem and confidence from other people, other support people in their lives, so that their reality becomes what the batterer is telling them. So if the batterer is saying, it's all your fault, you made me do it, they start internalizing that. They start internalizing that self-blame and feeling like, there's something that they could be doing differently. And the other piece of it is that, as you pointed out, I mean, victims know their batterers better than anybody else because they are constantly making decisions every day in their lives on how to keep themselves and their children safe. So if a victim knows that, you know, when the batterer comes home and drinks, you know, X number of drinks, that's kind of the trigger for that person. Or, you know, if the batterer gets really angry about a sports team losing or something that happened at work, the victim typically is more attuned to some of those triggers and some of those things that might escalate. So they can, you know, they become very hypervigilant and start noticing those kinds of things, which is why I think it's so important to respect victims' choices and to listen to them when they say, you know, like, for example, if they know a restraining order against that person is going to escalate the situation, that they may not want to get a restraining order, even though everybody else thinks that that's what they should do. So that's kind of how we operate as an organization, is really knowing that every person is entirely different. We don't go in with prescribed solutions, that we really listen and partner with the victim to find out what that person really wants and what they believe will help them be safer, and then we can help them achieve that.
We're talking about domestic abuse here on All About Living today on 1670 WTDY. Our guest is Shannon Berry, and she's Executive Director of the Domestic Abuse Intervention Services. And I think we're going to pepper throughout this program today how people reach you, how they contact you, in case someone is listening who you're a voice of hope and a source to go to. And I think that would perhaps be important to people to have a relief that there is a phone call. There is a telephone number they can call at least to get some guidance in the process. So how would people contact
you? Sure. We have a 24-hour helpline, and that phone number is 251-4445. And that helpline is for anybody who's dealing with domestic violence in their own relationships, as well as concerned friends and family members. It can be really hard to know how to support somebody going through this. And so our advocates are available, again, 24/7 at 251-4445 to kind of help people talk through the dynamics that they're experiencing and then some of the options that they might have for safety.
251-4445.
Yes.
And we will also post that phone number as well as your website, which is
www.abuseintervention.org.
Abuseintervention.org. And we'll post that on carolcobyradio.com along with this program after it airs today. If you'd like to join in the conversation, our phone number is 321-1670, 321-1670, or *123 on your U.S. cellular phone. We're going to stop for a break, and when we return, let's define domestic abuse. It's obviously if you're beaten up and you've got a black eye and mm-hmm. teeth are lost and you physically and tangibly can see the abuse, but there are many insidious forms of abuse, and sometimes people don't even realize that that's actually a part of their life and what they're experiencing. So we'll be back with Shannon Berry and more of All About Living right after these messages. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. Welcome back to our program. This segment is brought to you by Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, where expertise with compassion is powerful medicine. We're talking about domestic abuse today, domestic violence. Our guest is Shannon Berry, who is Executive Director of the Domestic Abuse Intervention Services. And that's an organization that services Dane County?
That's correct. Yeah, we've been around for over 33 years, and we serve all of Dane County. So.
If anyone is relating to this subject matter on any level, whether through personal experience or knowing someone, I'm going to continue to give the phone number and allow you to as well, Shannon. There is a hotline that you can call, 251-4445. That's area code 608. And do you have an 800 number as well?
We do, but I am embarrassed to say that I don't have it memorized.
Go to abuseintervention.org, and the numbers will be up there. In fact, we'll probably have it before the end of the program here. We were talking about, we put a face on it with the event for Tracy Judd last evening, who was a soccer mom, a very put-together woman. Her family had no idea domestic mm-hmm. violence was in her life, and she was actually murdered by her abuser. And you celebrated her birthday and her life last evening, and also to have people talk more about the situation of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. It's been a hidden secret that people know exists, but no one wants to talk about.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, unfortunately, it's such an incredibly pervasive issue, and people are often surprised to know that it exists here in Dane County. And in fact, you know, one in four women will be a victim of domestic violence at some point in her lifetime. And one in three of the cases referred to the DA's office every year here in Dane County are domestic violence related. So it's unfortunately, it's just as pervasive here in Dane County as it is anywhere else.
We think of domestic violence, obviously, if somebody's all battered and beaten mm-hmm. and you can see it. But there are many forms of domestic violence, aren't there?
There are, yeah. I mean, I think people often commonly just think about physical abuse, but there's so many different ways that batterers will control their victims. And that's what domestic violence is really all about. It's about power and control. So it can be emotional abuse. It can be psychological abuse, financial abuse, you know, not allowing someone to have access to resources. It can be spiritual abuse, not allowing someone to attend their church or to find comfort in their faith, or forcing someone to convert to something that they don't believe in. It can be using children against the victim. There's all sorts of different ways. And I think that it's interesting, having done this work for over 10 years now, one of the things I will say is just working with domestic violence victims, that many of them will talk about how the bruises heal, but the emotional abuse is really like an attack on their souls, and how that is so difficult to overcome and to transcend. And so I think that we can't really minimize how pervasive emotional and how damaging emotional abuse can be.
Well, it attacks their ability to be self-confident, mm-hmm. to make independent decisions, and even to go forward with their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you feel that you're insignificant as a person, then you've started believing everything your batterer has told you about, that you're worthless, or all those other horrible things that people will say to other people to hurt and control them. It can be incredibly difficult to even reach out for help, because you may believe that it is your fault, or that somehow you deserve this. And I think that that's the message we want to continue to reiterate to people, is that nobody deserves to be abused. People deserve to be in healthy, happy relationships that are equitable, where, you know, there's mutual respect from both parties, not respect based in fear. And people have that right, and they deserve to be happy and healthy and loved.
On your website, abuseintervention.org, mm-hmm. you have some descriptions of what different forms of domestic violence actually look like. Under emotional, which you were talking about, those things that you can't physically see, but are really get to the soul of a person. Here are some examples that you have. Extreme displays of jealousy and a possession. I mean, batterers, abusers feel that they possess the person, that they own that individual.
They feel very entitled over making all decisions about that individual. And it's, you know, the other piece of it that I think is so insidious is that so often, victims kind of get involved in these. Victims kind of get involved in these relationships. These relationships don't start out as abusive. It's not like you open the door on the first date and someone punches you in the face. I mean, that's a pretty obvious red flag. Batterers are can be very charming. They can, abusive relationships start like any other relationship. They start with that honeymoon phase and, where somebody's very attentive and doting. And a lot of times people who are controlling are using that honeymoon phase to collect information about the victim, to learn what makes that person tick so that they know how to control that person later on, so that they know what kind of buttons to push that's going to make that person doubt themselves. So if the batter is, finding out that the victim is very close to family, that's something that they're going to really work hard to isolate that person. And so it can happen very slowly over a period of time to the point where the victim kind of finds themselves in the relationship the relationship is abusive and it feels like it kind of sneaked up on them. But the reality is it's that very methodical way of gaining control over the person's life.
Do the batterers know that they're abusive?
That's a great question. I don't work with batterers. That's a really good question. I don't think batterers would probably label themselves as being abusive. Typically
they feel they have the right.
They feel they have the right. And they will they'll use whatever tactic works as long as it works. Which is why, going back to my earlier point, which is why it's so dangerous oftentimes when victims do try to make that separation and it can escalate things. If a batterer is finding that name calling works, they'll continue to do that behavior as long as it works until the victim, says, you know what, I don't like it when you call me stupid. Then the batterer might escalate it to another point, where it might.
But the batterers are clever enough, they find that trigger. Another person, and then they keep using that over and over and over again,
which can make the victim really feel like they're crazy. It's kind of this. How do I want to explain it? I had a person I worked with once who told me that every time they figured out the rules that were set, that the batterer, this person's batterer, would change the rules to keep the person kind of off balance. And that's a really, I think, the best kind of way to describe it.
Well, you mentioned the charming nature of batterers at times also. There is this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of a personality where after the battering, then they become charming and gifts and I'll never do it again.
Right.
And the victim, because you don't want to change.
Sure.
Change is difficult.
Right. And hope springs eternal, and if a relationship starts out like any other relationship with this honeymoon stage, and then there's an incident of violence, and then the next day everything is honeymoon again, there's that, well, maybe it was just that one time, and I've invested X number of months or X number of years with this person, and that hope kind of springs eternal. Well, maybe if I do this differently, that person will go back to the person I fell in love with at the beginning. And so I think that that's where victims can often find themselves, again, sort of surprised to be in this kind of a relationship because it just kind of wiggles its way in.
We're talking about domestic abuse here on All About Living on WTDY. The phone numbers for the Domestic Abuse Intervention Services, which are located here in Dane County, the acronym DAIS, D-A-I-S, excuse me. Phone numbers are 251-4445. And thanks to Jason Stapleton, our wonderful producer, he came up with the 800 number.
Oh, good. Thank you, Jason.
Shannon. And that is 800-747-4045. 800-747-4045. 4045. That's a 24-hour-a-day hotline.
That's correct.
Answered by a real person?
Answered by real people, yeah. Primarily volunteers. And so we're always looking for people to help us. A lot of our work is done with volunteers. So people can go to our website and learn how to get involved.
Do they receive any training to be volunteers
they
to do this?
We have a pretty extensive training. It's over 20 hours. It's 20 to 30 hours worth of training. And then we also have people observe shifts. They're not just thrown on the phone. Their first day on the job by themselves. They go through observation shifts, and we have staff who are there to help them and train them on the phone as well.
Is it valuable for your volunteers to have had prior experience in their own lives with domestic abuse, or to be observers of it in their own situations or families?
You know, we have volunteers who do have personal experience, and we have volunteers who have never experienced domestic violence. And I think what it really takes is somebody who's caring and empathic and patient and can be a good listener. That's really what it takes.
A couple of more areas of domestic violence that are part of the definition. There is sexual domestic violence.
Yeah. You know, people often think about sexual abuse. There's that stereotype again that it's, you know, a rapist jumping out of the bushes in a dark alley and it's a stranger attack. Most sexual violence occurs between people who know each other, and it can occur in intimate partner relationships, whether those are, you know, heterosexual or same-sex relationships. And certainly people who are married can also experience sexual violence by their partner. And I think that oftentimes we only think about sexual violence as being rape, but it can be a lot of different things. It can be sexually humiliating somebody. It can be forcing somebody to wear things that they don't feel comfortable wearing. It can be forcing them to watch pornography if they don't feel comfortable doing that. So it's any form of control that has to do with the intimate part of the relationship.
So it's not just rape.
It's not just
people,
rape.
Well, I wasn't raped, and therefore it must not be domestic abuse. Well, if it's totally contrary to what you would prefer doing at that moment or be involved with, then it is a form of control.
Absolutely. And again, you know, going back to the humiliation, that's another thing. When I used to do a lot of work in the schools, I would encounter that a lot too, where young people would talk about how their boyfriends or girlfriends would, you know, spread sexual rumors about them, or, you know, talk about their intimate relationships with their friends and things like that to embarrass them or to humiliate them. That can also be a form of sexual violence as well.
Mm-hmm. So. And then you talked about the economic and holding back funds, but there's more to it than just dollars.
Yeah.
It can be getting rid of your personal property, throwing it away or destroying it or breaking something, using money as a tool to control your behavior. It can be all kinds of things, and not letting you know what the family finances are. Or
yes, absolutely. You know, not allowing someone to be on a mortgage or a lease, not allowing them to have their own access to money, or forcing them, on the flip side, forcing them to work, and then the abuser doesn't work and takes all the money. That can be another way. And it's interesting because domestic violence has a huge impact, not only economically on the victim, but also on businesses, because there's research out there that shows that batterers will often use their company's property to stalk and check up on their victims. So a lot of business owners have no idea how domestic violence is actually impacting their bottom line as well. But certainly, I think for an individual victim, you think about money is power in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have access to resources, it can certainly catch you and get you in a situation where you feel like you have no escape.
That's why an organization such as yours is so critical, because all of these forms of control and abuse and degrading behavior and control of finances are ways to keep you from being independent and on your own and confident in your own life. And so it just holds you back from being able to move forward, even if you want to.
Right, absolutely. You know, and again, it does all come back to power and control. And so that's, you know, I guess if that's one message I hope your listeners take away today, is that you know, power and control is always at the root of any domestic violence, and all of these other kinds of forms, all these other forms of abuse and these tactics. It's sort of like an onion. It's, you know, different layers of the onion depending on who the victim might be. So if you're in a same-sex relationship, you know, that may be a barrier to achieving safety because you're afraid that your batter is going to out you if you haven't, you know, if you haven't come out to your family yet. If you're an immigrant and you're maybe a non-English speaker and your batter is the only person in the family who speaks English, that can be another way to control you. So there's all sorts of kind of different layers of that onion that are built up based on who you are. And batters will use, again, any tactic that they can to ensure that power and control is maintained.
One of the descriptions you have is your definition, and it is domestic violence or abuse is any attempt to control the behavior and or emotions of an intimate partner and diminish or prevent their free choice. And that constitutes domestic abuse. Victims do not cause the abuse. That's
right.
A big issue, I'm sure, that you
right.
deal with. And nothing a victim says or does can excuse the abuse. Abusers bear sole responsibility for their
right.
actions. We're talking about domestic abuse today on All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. Shannon Berry, the Executive Director of Domestic Abuse Intervention Services, is our guest. Our phone number is 321-1670 or *123 on the U.S. cellular phone if you wish to join in the conversation. This program and the phone numbers, the helpline numbers that you can call if you need help or assistance in your own life or with a friend or family member. The phone numbers are 251-4445 or 1-800-747-4045. And those will be posted on this program, which will be on carolcobyradio.com. We'll be right back with our continuing discussion of domestic abuse. Welcome back to our program. This segment of our program is brought to you by Home Health United. You got a friend right here online at homehealthunited.org. And Independent Living, your connection to an independent life. And that's what you're all about, isn't it, Shannon? An independent life, independent in spirit and in actions, not that you have to live alone.
Right.
Hopefully you're living in harmony and happiness in a family environment. Shannon Berry is our guest. She's Executive Director of the Domestic Abuse Intervention Services, which is a Dane County organization whose mission is to empower
those affected by domestic violence and advocate for social change through support, education, and outreach.
Yeah, that's simple enough. And it, in a very short statement, it covers mm-hmm. the whole breadth and depth of what you do. What are some of the services that DAZE can offer to anyone who is affected by domestic abuse?
Well, as we've talked about before, we have a 24-hour helpline, which again is 251-4445. And that's actually the gateway to all of our services. So if people are interested in our other services, that's what they would call. We also have crisis response advocates who can go out and meet with people face-to-face at different partnership sites throughout Dane County to help them with safety planning and looking for the resources that they might need and, you know, giving basic restraining order assistance. We also have legal advocates who are not attorneys and they don't provide legal advice, but they can provide information about the various legal systems and legal options available to victims and can help them navigate those systems because the legal system can be very complicated. And so especially when you are feeling isolated and alone and unsure of yourself, it can help to have a support person there kind of walking you through the processes. We also have support groups a couple times a week. And again, people would call our crisis line for that information. We have a children's program that's open to children from the community whose parents are attending support group, as well as children who are residing in our shelter. And our shelter, we operate the only domestic violence shelter for Dane County. And people can stay for up to 30 days in our shelter. It's an emergency shelter, so it's really kind of that when somebody really needs a place to get to, we can offer them that. What am I missing?
And I think, well, what about the pet program?
Oh, the pet. Yes. Yes. So that's another, we have a partnership with the Dane County Humane Society and the Sheltering Animals of Abuse Victims program. So if somebody has an animal that they're concerned about and they don't want to come to our shelter because we can't have animals in the shelter with a communal living environment, we can put their animals in foster care for up to 90 days so that they can kind of figure out their options and know that their animal is safe. And we've sheltered everything. I mean, we've sheltered dogs and cats, certainly, but lizards and, you know, tarantulas, gerbils, horses. We did horses once, goats, turkeys. So, yeah, pretty much anything. We will work with the Dane County Humane Society and figure that out. So that's been an amazing program. And it's interesting. I mean, there was so interesting to see animal abuse reported in the news, and oftentimes that connection isn't made to domestic violence. And so often that's what it really is about, is abusing the animal to control the victim.
The background information that I'm aware of regarding abuse, and actually I was involved with the Humane Society, part of their program to build the new shelter, mm-hmm. their campaign. And so I was familiar with their many programs and their research on abusers in younger in their life often abused animals.
Right.
And this was a real symptom and something that needed to be dealt with at an early age because it escalates into abuse
Absolutely.
Of adults.
Yeah, if somebody can hurt an animal, it's just one more step before they hurt a person. And so there's definitely a lot of research that correlates to violence against animals and violence against people.
And so it would be one of an easy way for a batterer or abuser to turn to if there are animals in the home. It would come naturally to use that animal as a source of controlling that victim.
Right, to instill fear in the victim and in the children. You know, oftentimes kids are very attached to their animals, and you know, I don't want to traumatize your listeners. But you know, we have had situations where you know, families that we've worked with, the batter has hurt or killed pets in an effort to terrorize the victim and the children into remaining silent. And I think it's a demonstration oftentimes of the power that they wield, and a way to encourage or to force the victim and children to be silent.
Mm-hmm. And to stay there and just do nothing. This has to have tremendous impact on children involved in these situations.
It absolutely does. You know, that when I first started at DAYS, I worked in the support group and children's programs. And children who, it's interesting, a lot of the people, a lot of the victims of domestic violence really have no idea how much their kids actually know. And research shows that about 80 to 90% of children who are growing up in violent homes are aware of the domestic violence. So, you know, I would often hear victims say, well, you know, the violence only happened after the kids went to bed. Kids are aware. They know. They see the bruises the next morning. They hear the fighting at night. And there's actually national research that shows that children who witness domestic violence have a lot of the same outcomes as children who are direct victims of child abuse and neglect. So a lot of, you know, externalizing behaviors like running away or fighting with peers, and a lot of internalizing behaviors like depression, suicidal ideations, and things like
that.
Doing
poorly in school.
Doing poorly mm-hmm. in school. In fact, there was a study that came out of UC Davis that showed, it was last year, the year before, that actually showed that children who are experiencing domestic violence at home actually negatively impact their classmates' test scores. So it's this ripple effect. So it's not just kids themselves who are experiencing the domestic violence, but their peers are also being affected. And it can be, you know, school can be a really a difficult place for a child who's living in a violent home. Oftentimes they're exhausted,
mm-hmm.
And they're afraid. They've been told repeatedly, don't talk about what's going on in our family. And so children will act out their feelings, and that's usually what we see.
What about the domestic abuse within the home, role modeling behaviors for children when they grow up and become
right.
adults and have their own homes and families?
Yeah, children who grow up in violent homes or witnessing domestic violence are more likely to become batterers or victims in their own adult relationships. And, you know, it's I think that that's one of the things that is so important about our children's program is really helping to break that cycle earlier and helping kids to have a safe space to talk about their feelings, to process different ways of dealing with aggression and anger, and giving them positive role models. And also, I think it's really important because we're oftentimes in a family's life for such a short period of time, we really try to focus on nurturing that bond between the non-battering parent and the child, because that's really who the child is going to depend on. So we want to help encourage battered parents to have healthier relationships with their kids and to feel empowered as parents, because kids really do want structure and consistency, and oftentimes the battering parent can't provide that, but the non-battering parent can. And so we try to really help support the victimized parent in finding their voice as a parent again.
Is the solution always just to separate from the batterer and go on with your life without that person in your life? Or are there success stories where through mutual counseling or mm-hmm. intervention, family intervention, that you can keep families together?
You know, we at DAZE, we don't have any prescribed solutions for people. So we work with people regardless of whether or not they want to stay with their partner or if they want to separate. Batterers really are the most successful at changing their behaviors when they've gone through batterer treatment. And couples counseling is usually not recommended in domestic violence situations because couples counseling assumes that you have two equal parties. And in domestic violence, you, by definition, don't. You have one person who's in control. And so couples counseling is typically not recommended based in, you know, the federal best practice standards. But batterers treatment and good batterers treatment providers, which we are very fortunate here in Dane County to have a couple of really amazing batterers treatment programs, they do a lot of work with the victim as well in terms of they check out, you know, the batterer might do a really good job in group and say all the right things or say all the right things to their therapist, but the therapist in certified batterer treatment programs will check in with the victim to see if the behavior really is changing from the victim's perspective, because and that's a way to also empower the victim. So certainly there is hope available. I don't want to say that you know, the only solution is to separate. I mean, people oftentimes, if the victim is getting help from an organization like ours and the batterer is getting help from a batterer's treatment provider, there have been success stories, certainly.
And if I'm hearing you correctly, part of the solution is for the victim to reach a point where the batterer, if the behavior is unacceptable, for the victim to be assertive and really mean it, and this is no longer acceptable, and this is not allowed.
Right, and I think it's, you know, I think it's hard. I think what victims really need, it's crucial for them to have support people like DAZE in their lives to kind of get to that point. A lot of times batterers will end up in batterers treatment because they're court ordered to. Mm-hmm. And so even if the victim hasn't gotten to that place, the court system will often kind of make that decision for the batterer, like this, that this behavior is unacceptable and it needs to stop and this is your last chance. And that can also be extremely effective, even if the victim isn't at that place yet. And it gives the victim the opportunity then to have someone else label the behavior as negative and kind of go, oh, right, yeah, that isn't healthy. And that sometimes can help them, you know, make that first step in reaching out to us.
It's like a light switch that has to go on in the victim's brain also, that a big aha, this is no longer
And
acceptable and will no longer be a part of my life. Now, whether you are going to be a part of my life or not depends on whether you understand that this is no longer acceptable and it will not happen again.
And, you know, it's so different for every person. And that's exactly what it is. I mean, you know, for some people that I've worked with, they have said, it was when he or she first hit the kids, and that was the line in the sand. For other people, it was the first time that they were hit. For some people, it was the first threat. For others, it was when their batterer started cheating on them. So I think every person kind of has their line in the sand as to when, okay, that, you know, that light switch will go on. And for some people, it was somebody else saying, you know, I'm concerned about the way that your partner treats you, and you deserve to be happy and you deserve to be safe. And for them, that's the light switch. And so I think we all have an opportunity to transform the community in that way, and to not turn a blind eye when we see things that are happening, because we can really truly make a difference if we talk about it.
I want to talk more about what we as individuals in a community can do. Before we go to break, though, I want to ask you, what about alcohol and drugs? How involved are they? How often are they involved in domestic abuse situations?
Alcohol and drugs don't cause domestic violence, but they escalate it oftentimes. And I think that's a really important distinction. There are a lot of people who are alcoholics and drug addicts who are never violent. And there are a lot of abusers who never use alcohol and drugs. So they typically escalate the situation. They don't typically cause it. And I would say that, you know, in the years that I've been working with victims, I will hear that a lot. Like, you know, my partner is going to AA, or they're going to treatment now, and I think things are going to get better. And it usually gets better, but it usually doesn't stop. It might become less physical, but usually it doesn't end, because it's not really about the alcohol and drugs.
It could be more subtle and harder to identify.
Exactly. Yeah.
Our guest today is Shannon Barry, who is Executive Director of the Domestic Abuse Intervention Services. Their hotline numbers for anyone needing help or information is 608-251-4445. That's a local number, 251-4445. Their 800 number is 800-747-4045. Those numbers will be posted on carolcobyradio.com. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. I'm Carol Coby, and we'll be right back after these messages. The hour has just flown by. We're back with our final minutes with Shannon Barry, Executive Director of the Domestic Abuse Intervention Services. We're talking about domestic abuse, obviously, today. And if you have a problem with it in your own world, in your own life, or know family or friends that you think could use the help of a support system, phone numbers are 251-4445 or 800-747-4045. And those are 24-hour helpline numbers answered by real persons that are provided by the Domestic Abuse Intervention Services. Shannon, you mentioned in before the break, you also talked about the workplace and employment arenas. And oftentimes that's a place where the abusers can subtly control the individual, and that's where stalking can take place.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, batterers, you know, again, going back, I'm kind of sounding like a broken record, I guess, but batters, again, will do whatever they can to control their victims. And that can mean showing up at their victim's workplace, you know, checking in on them, stalking them. There's research that shows that about 8 million days of work are lost in this country every year due to domestic violence, which is the equivalent of 32,000 full-time jobs. And that can be because, you know, the victim either is afraid to go to work because they're afraid that their batterer is going to show up there, or maybe they've been injured there and they're taking sick days. And same thing with the batterers, skipping work, their own work time to go and check on their victim. And again, you know, about 75% of batterers will use their own like the companies that they work for, they'll use their resources to stalk their victims. So, you know, their company's computers or their company's phones and things like that. So it really, unfortunately, it does dramatically impact the workplace and the bottom line of a lot of companies.
And domestic abuse is a health risk for and it's primarily women that are abused.
According to the federal government, about 85% of the cases of domestic violence in this country are women who are victims. So it is primarily women.
And if they're battered or abused, they are not well. They may not feel well. They may not have enough rest. So they're sick, and their productivity cannot be at its peak either.
Right, right. And certainly there's also healthcare costs to companies and to the healthcare system. What is it? I have to look at my... Oh, yeah. There's a statistic here from the Department of Justice that More than one third of the women treated for violent injuries in emergency rooms were hurt by intimate partners. And so that's, I mean, one third. That's amazing.
So if it weren't for the fact that they were abused, these healthcare costs wouldn't exist.
Exactly, exactly. And certainly that's going to have an impact on all of us in terms of our insurance rates and things like that, but also on companies and their bottom lines and what they're providing. So, you know, domestic violence, whether people are aware of it or not, impacts every single person in this community. It's likely that every single one of us knows somebody who is a victim of domestic violence. I mean, one in four women in her lifetime is going to be a victim of domestic violence. So we all know somebody, whether or not we're aware of it. It could be a neighbor, a sister, a mother.
And if we think that, well, they live in such a nice house, there couldn't be any
right.
domestic abuse going on, or they've got, you know, multiple degrees, or
right.
they look so nice and they're such fun, nice people to be with mm-hmm. when you're out at a luncheon with them or whatever.
Right.
The fact that these kinds of scenarios exist has nothing to do with whether or not they may be abused behind closed doors.
Exactly. And it kind of goes back to that analogy of the onion again, too. I mean, if you are a person of resources or standing in the community, that's not actually another barrier in terms of admitting that you're dealing with domestic violence. Because, you know, maybe your partner is a well-respected, you know, mm-hmm. elected official, or, we have somebody who's very wealthy, and you don't want to admit how violence might be impacting your family. So that can be another
layer. It can cut you off from life, from your
Absolutely.
Social circles, from your professional circles,
Absolutely.
From the things that you do on a daily basis.
Right.
All of a sudden, everything is at risk, not just whether or not you live at a particular address
exactly.
or not. What can we as a community do? Employers, individuals, friends, families, the community as a whole looking at this as an issue?
There's a lot of things. I mean, I think the biggest thing, and it's become like my personal mission, is to talk about it. I want everyone in this community to talk about it. It's been over 30 years since we've had the domestic violence movement, and unfortunately, it's still this silent epidemic. And until we start talking about it, it's going to continue. Batterers bank on the fact that we're going to be silent, and batterers depend on our silence as permission to continue their behaviors. So people need to start talking out. When you see it reported in the media, and it's not reported properly, it's reported as a spat or something like that, to speak up, to write a letter to the editor and to label it for what it is. You know, if you are dealing with somebody in your own life who you're concerned about, I think it's important to reach out again and to say, I've noticed how your partner treats you. I'm just really concerned about you, and I want you to know that I'm here for you, whatever decision you make. That can be a very empowering thing to say to someone. One of the worst things to say to a domestic violence victim is, if you don't leave this person, I'm not going to be your friend anymore. I'm not going to support you emotionally anymore. Because what that does is to further the isolation. But I think even worse than that is to remain silent and to not say anything. The more we remain silent about it, the more we give it permission and we give it power. So I would rather have somebody reach out and say, you know, and I think that can be very scary for people, because it's like you don't want to offend someone and you don't want to be wrong. But I think that it's better to be wrong mm-hmm. in a situation like that, and to have someone say, no, it's not happening like that, you misunderstand, than to remain silent and have someone end up dead. Because somebody might be offended for a couple of days if you are wrong. But if somebody ends up being killed or murdered, that's a permanent thing. And
well, if you notice kind of degrading behavior or whatever,
right.
even if it isn't full-scale domestic abuse, it still is something that perhaps should be flagged.
Absolutely.
And people don't even need that to be degraded in their
right.
personal life.
Right. And, you know, and the other piece of it, too, is somebody may deny it to you in that moment, but you've planted a seed and you've said something, and they know that somebody else has noticed that they're not crazy and that they deserve something. And, it takes an average of, I think, 6 attempts at leaving or separating from an abusive relationship before people are usually successful. But to know that somebody noticed and that somebody cares, it can be an amazing and empowering thing. And I've had people who have told me that it was, you know, their pastor said something, or their best friend or their neighbor. And it was just like that person noticing that helped turn on that light switch, going back to the earlier conversation. So there's really not much harm that can happen. And the other thing is, I think, you know, being aware when you're seeing degrading behavior, you know, acknowledging that too, and pointing it out to the person who is making the choice to be abusive, and saying, you know, I don't appreciate that kind of language, or I would ask that you not talk that way in front of me, or something, and to point out that it's not mm-hmm. okay.
So we all have to get a little more assertive about it too.
Absolutely.
And not just turn our back.
Right, right. It's really a community-wide issue. I mean, domestic violence is not going to end with law enforcement. It's not going to end with victim advocacy organizations like DAYS. It's going to end when, as a community, we collectively say that this is not acceptable in our community, and we all collectively start holding batterers responsible for their behaviors. The reality is that domestic violence, only about a quarter of it is ever reported to law enforcement. Mm-hmm. So the other three quarters, that's where we all can have an impact. And I have to be honest, like in the 4 years that I've been the executive director, when I talk about this issue, I have not yet had one person say to me that this is not an important issue. This is an incredibly important issue, and we all know somebody. So let's all start talking about it.
Well, and if you belong to an organization and the organization has programs and discusses community
right.
issues, put this out there as a topic for discussion.
Absolutely.
And invite a speaker to come.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if your church has a bulletin or your neighborhood association has a newsletter, and invite someone to write an article about domestic violence and how people can reach out and get help, and ways that people can get involved. So.
What about public policy? What can our legislators do?
Well, our legislators can ensure that they protect laws that we know work, like mandatory arrest, that we are promoting victim safety when we're thinking about things like child custody laws. You know, children... again, children who grew up in violent families that have a lot of the same negative outcomes as children who are direct victims of child abuse themselves. So we want to make sure that we put the needs of children first, and not the needs of parents. So we want to make sure that restraining orders are taken seriously, that we're continuing to... promote legislation that holds people accountable for violation of restraining orders and things like that.
Thank you so much, Shannon Berry, Executive Director, Domestic Abuse Intervention Services. One more time, the phone numbers?
The phone number is 251-4445 or 1-800-747-4045.
We'll be posted on carolkobyradio.com, carolkobyradio.com.